The question was asked, why don't we just view world history as a series of events that stem from economics and sociological changes? I think that the Tanakh and Chazal repeatedly point out to us our capacity to affect change. If you look at world history, you'll see it was individuals that changed world history. It was individuals who moved their ideas forward. It could be Karl Marx. It could be Lenin and Stalin. But there were individuals who moved for change. It could be Thomas Edison. It could be Benjamin Franklin. It could be Brown. It could be Nietzsche. Wherever you want to go, these attitudes ultimately shaped Rousseau. I mean, they shaped the vantage point and ultimately the actions of people. In Tanakh and in Chazal, we are repeatedly reminded of the potential of the individual. Now, Mordechai, Ish Yehudi, one individual stood up to Haman. Everyone said, "You're crazy. Why are you standing up to him? Be more pluralistic, be more accepting." Mordechai says, "I could be accepting of everything, but he's wearing an idol. He's wearing an idol on his chain so that whenever we bow to him, we're bowing to that idol. That I can't do." They tell Mordechai, "You're endangering all of us." And Mordechai sticks to his guns. Well, you know what? Ultimately, it seems like they were right and Mordechai was wrong. And by the end of the story, everyone knows Mordechai was right. The one individual who saved all of Jewish history. And if not for him, who knows where we'd be. So, one person, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, one person. Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva's wife. Individuals made the right choice and they affected all of history. When we look at Bechira Chofshit and when we look at our capacity to affect the world for better, it gives us responsibility to be good people. When the world describes world history as a series of events affected by sociological and economic changes, so then they're taking away the responsibility of the individual to be an active, caring, influential individual. That responsibility of Bechira Chofshit, that responsibility which translates into B'tzelem Elokim, we were given Hashem's form, our capacity to change the world. So we view that as, look at the Chafetz Chaim. A gentle old man sitting in a small town in Radin, but look at what a change he's impacted. 100 years and the world's a different place. All of us know Chafetz Chaim, Shmirat HaLashon, Mishnah Brura. One person changed the world. Look at Rav Kook Zatzal. Look at the Chazon Ish. We're all learning here the Emunah U'Bitachon. The giants of world history and the giants of Jewish history were individuals. And that's Bechira Chofshit. That's our responsibility within Bechira Chofshit, to become giants, to help the world move forward. And the Talmud in Tractate Tanis tells us about Rabbi Baroka, who was standing in the marketplace. Elio comes to him. He asks Elio, "Is anyone here who's going to get the world to come?" And he says, "No." So you have to imagine a marketplace, 2 million people. It's more than we've probably seen in our lifetime. 2 million people. You can't see the end of the sea of people. And he's telling him, "No one here is going to get the world to come." So then a minute later he says, "Yeah, there are two guys over there. They're going to get the world to come." So he runs after them. He says, "What do you guys do?" He says, "Whenever someone's upset, we make jokes. We try to make them happy. And we try to make people be more easygoing, not so uptight, not so sad." So why did the Talmud tell us that? Sometimes we think the only way to the world to come is through Torah. You got to be a giant of Torah. So for sure, Torah is the biggest mitzvah, and we have to invest our energies there. But we have to know that being a good person is also a great way to get to the world to come. Going out of one's way to be good to other people is also there. And you see many stories in the Talmud and in the Midrashim that stress the importance of being a good, kind person. We find in Hasidut a lot, but it's important to know that it's way before Hasidut. The idea dates back to the Shas and back to the Torah. So that's our responsibility. And the idea that you can get there, the idea that we can affect change, gives us responsibility and gives us the impetus to act. When the world keeps speaking about these forces at play, so that predeterminism takes out the charge, it takes out the excitement from being active, from being the one who is the catalyst for change. And we view world history as a series of events that were propelled by individuals. who chose to make a difference. Hashem works through individuals. We have to try and be those individuals, be the vessel through which Hashem changes the world for better.
So by that logic, Hitler, an individual, had a plan. So God was working through Hitler to do what happened. And then the Allies were working against God's plan to try to stop Hitler.
Why? You see, what... That's the one step which we're not allowed to take. Why? That's the one step we said you cannot take. We said we don't know where Hashem is saying this is my action and this is why I allow you b'chira chofshit. We know we have a job to do the best we can. That's our job. Our job within the range of b'chira chofshit is to do the best we can. Doing the best we can, we are also taught that we can change the world. Hitler was able to change the world, and other people were able to change the world. When Roosevelt decided not to accept the ships that would come on to dock in the United States, so we say on the one hand, if Hashem didn't allow that to happen, it wouldn't have happened. On the other hand, when Roosevelt gets to the world to come, he has a price to pay. He took his free will and used it for bad. There's a duality at play. If Hashem wanted those people to live, they could have lived. Hashem had his ways to make them live. So the ship could have gotten derailed and landed in Brazil. There could have been a lot of things that happened. And if Hashem wanted them to die, the ship could have sunk at sea also. But Hashem allowed Roosevelt to have that free choice, and Roosevelt made a choice, and for that he's going to pay, or he's already paid.
Why didn't Hashem want those people to whatever happened? Why is that not Hashem all the way through?
Why the idea that it is Hashem? The idea that it is Hashem doesn't mean that Roosevelt didn't have free will. People die every day, but this person didn't have to die at someone else's hands. If in Hashem's book this person was supposed to die today, and so and so chose to murder him, so he was given the free will to murder him. Could be had he not murdered him, he would have had a heart attack anyways. But that's not our calculation. He did an action, and that he will get judged for. He was given free will, and that he'll get judged for. We say, "Migalgadin choval yedei chayav." Hashem brings bad things to the world through bad people. So we each have a choice. Are we going to be a good person or a bad person? And with that choice, we take action, and our actions we will be judged for. You'll say, if Hashem didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't have happened. That's true. But it didn't have to happen through me. I have to be the source of good in the world.
I'm not talking about me. We're talking about other people.
What difference does it make who we're talking about? We each have a choice whether we will be a catalyst for good or bad. And you're right that we would not succeed in bringing bad to the world if Hashem didn't want that to happen. And we wouldn't succeed in bringing good to the world if Hashem didn't want it to happen. But good and bad could come to the world through different people.
So then you have to ask why. And we think that God... So if God wanted approves or lets happen every... bad thing that happens, you have to ask why. Why do they deserve it? What do they do?
That's a good question, but that's a different question.
Maybe they didn't go to Israel.
That's a different question. Fine. I accept the question, but it's different than the one we've been discussing until now.
I still don't see why. That you're so convinced that it's free will and not that God is just making it all happen through people. Because we have the idea of free will, but we also have the idea of Hashkafat Pratit. So why is it not every... Why can't everything in history be God?
Why can't it be both?
Because they can't commit.
Let's take a simple example. Okay, the terrorists walked into the shul in Hernov. Some people they shot, and some people their gun misfired. They couldn't get the gun to shoot. Okay, one person they hacked on the head 3 times, and he's in the hospital with slight wounds, and he's already talking and he's fully functional. And other people were killed. Okay, so you could look at that and say it's all coincidental. You could look at that and say, I don't know why Hashem allowed this person to get shot, and by this guy, the gun misfired 3 times. Every time he got caught and they couldn't get a bullet out. I don't know why. But obviously, Hashem let this happen and didn't let that happen. So then you say, okay, what do you want from the terrorist? He was only doing Hashem's job. So that's where we say, yes, Hashem wanted A, B, and C to die, but it didn't have to happen at the hands of so-and-so. It could have happened with a traffic accident, could have happened in many other ways. Hashem allowed us the free will. His free will, that terrorist's free will, does not mean that someone died when they shouldn't have died. But it does mean that they died at his hands. He made a choice. Now, you'll ask me, would they have died on that day? Going, I said when we began, I said there are a few approaches to this question. But going with this approach, so then we would say, yes, they would have died even if he wouldn't have walked into that shul.
Why?
Why would they have died? Why does anyone die?
No. What do you mean? Why? Usually, people don't die for out of a crazy circumstance.
People have heart attacks, people get hit by cars,
okay.
People...
But if something so out of the ordinary that someone walks in with butcher knives and chops people's heads off or stabs them in the back three times, why is that not God who did that? Or allowed it or made it happen?
Why
those people to die that there?
So I said both. I said the fact that they were allowed to die is one thing. The fact that they died at this person's hands is another thing.
Why does it matter whose hands they died?
Because he is, that's what he's saying. He is dying.
It's
an intersection of two people's wills.
The person who got chopped his head off, he didn't have the free choice to live.
But if he was going to die that day anyways, I mean...
Why would he die that day?
Is this,
that's what's written. It's written that day you're going to die.
And if when we prevent terrorist attacks, so then it's written that they'll live that day. Yeah. But if the police aren't there, then so what do we mean? There's a balance between on the other hand we have security and procedures and whatever to prevent this. So are we trying to go against God's will?
Why is that against His will?
To be.
Okay, so I'm going to try to explain it again. You're assuming that Hashem's decision is always either he will live or he will die. Maybe Hashem's decision is if you do proper Ishtadlut, you'll live, and if you don't, you'll die.
Okay.
Ishtadlut is attempt, human attempt. We are responsible for human attempt. Attempt. We attempt to do things. Whether we will succeed or not is a good question. It's not in our hands. But we are responsible to attempt to do things. The idea of Ishtadlut is I have a responsibility to attempt to get a good outcome. I have a responsibility to have a security force. I have a responsibility to have life insurance. I have a responsibility to drive safely. All of those are attempts. They don't secure. They don't guarantee anything. A person can drive safely and... people's brake line gets cut, their car skids and slides. There are a million things that can happen. The next driver could be drunk. There are a million things that could happen, but we make attempts, and we're responsible for making attempts. That's what Ishtadlut is, the human attempt, the human responsibility to make attempts at good outcomes. And Hashem says, I created a world, and I gave you laws of physics. You can't jump off a mountain and say, jump off a bridge, jump off a building. I'll be okay if I wasn't meant to die today. Well, I won't die. But why not? Because Hashem says you have a responsibility. And it could be that if a person does not live up to that responsibility, then Hashem says, okay, you could kill yourself. I'm not going to stand in your way. I wasn't planning on you dying today. But if you want to, you could. I'm not going to stand in your way. You want me to get involved and stop you from dying today? Why should I? The idea that Hashem controls the world does not mean that Hashem will stand in our way necessarily. Sometimes Hashem says, you want to go that route? Fine. It says that if a person does something dangerous, Hashem says, let's reevaluate. Should we get in the way of harm hitting him? Now that he's doing this, he's used his free will to do something dangerous. So then now we will reevaluate whether he merits being saved from it. Wait, let's first understand the concept and then we'll move to specifics. So, we have free will, we have a responsibility to use that free will to make correct choices. Correct choices in observing mitzvot, and correct choices in being safe. So far, so good? So far, we're together? Yes, no, maybe.
But then why is it not all human responsibility? So why is God not at all? Which may, I think, if you take that approach, it makes a lot of sense. The more secure, the more army we, the more muscle we have, the more not something we do, whatever. That cause and effect. It's not abstract. If you have a, we're talking about it here, right? More security. When the army and the Shabak do more things to prevent terrorism, then it works.
It works? Okay, let me ask you. Wait. I saw a regime to our north that had extreme security, and I didn't see that it works. Look at Syria. You know, the people wanted to protest, so they came and they just killed a few tens of thousands. They protested some more, they killed some more. Doesn't get more secure than that. You just kill anyone that tries to rebel. You know, people say that's what we should do here. You know, if an Arab terrorist walks into a shul, so let's just mow down that whole village. Right? You'll hear extreme people talking this way. I didn't see that worked in Syria. I didn't see it work in Iraq. I didn't see it work. I'm just saying, your assumption that by being tougher you're more secure is
I'm saying, not a, like a policy, but in you want to go to, okay, here's a very concrete example. Okay, they put a concrete wall, right? In certain places to prevent blowing up buses, and it worked a lot. Almost as well, right? So, this is cause and effect and prevention and pain, isn't it?
Really? Are you sure? Because I don't think so. Because I could show you that where that... No.
A lot?
No. I'll tell you, I used to think like you. But then I heard that there are so many breaks in the wall that shepherds actually go back and forth on a daily basis with their sheep into Israeli territory. I think the wall is creating something totally different. There's a game going on here. And it has nothing to do with our security. I think our security is much better. I don't think it's because of the wall.
Only 2% of the wall is actually concrete.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what?
The wall, if you wanted to use the wall as an example of deterrence, then the proportion, the percentage of buses that are blown up within Israel proper would be much lower than the percentage of buses that are blown up in the Hayosh. And that's not the case. All of the buses bombing stopped at the same time here and in regardless of a wall that separated the two territories.
And also, a lot of times human action and intention can have the opposite, can backfire. So how do we know that this wall that we erected didn't cause a terrorist from East Jerusalem to come out? Like, we can't plan, like, you know, there's that saying, humans plan and God laughs.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we can do Azkan, but like, we can't foresee every possible nook and cranny that's, you know, possibly going
to
happen.
Well, let's take the opposite effect. Let's say, and we don't do these things to improve our security, then probably things are going to get worse.
I agree we have to do hishtadlut.
So
I agree.
Why doesn't it go all the way? Why isn't it all on our policies? And our
let's hear Nahum, okay?
Mm-hmm. So, in this conversation up until now, we've talked about it having to be 100% one or 100% the other, or if it can be both. Now, Frankenthal's made the point that people use their free will to make changes, to change the world. But what are we changing the world to? When we look at history and we say that God has a hand in history, that's great, but what does it mean? What is the hand moving towards? Isn't part of Jewish understanding and Jewish mentality that there is an end game, there is the age of redemption, and there is going to, you know, history is moving from point A to point Z, that we have a point that we're trying to get to, and that's like part of the purpose of being a Jew is to get to that point and influencing the world. That's also part of the point of Hashem influencing history and influencing politics through the means, is that lots of different things are going to happen, but history and politics and everything is going to move us into that general direction so that we'll bring about the redemption in the proper time.
I want to give an example, okay? Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? Very influential man in world history, right?
Why can't you bring a world history example from the time?
Okay. I think that most of the world will agree that Moshe Rabbeinu was one of the more influential people in world history.
He's on the Supreme
Court.
In the movie theaters right now.
So Chazal tell us that when Hashem showed up to Moshe, Moshe kept refusing. There's one place in Chazal where Hashem tells Moshe, if you're not taking them out, how are they going to get out? So it certainly sounds like it's up to him to make that choice. Hashem doesn't make it that way. That's it, Moshe. Now you're going. Even though one Medrash says Hashem did. One Medrash says that, just parenthetical remark, one Medrash says that Moshe kept saying no, and then Hashem said, you think you're in control, watch. And he started walking against his free will. But we'll leave that medrash aside for a minute. Just out of intellectual honesty, I felt bad saying something which has a medrash tanhuma against it. But so Hashem's telling Moshe, you know, the Jews have to come out of Egypt. You have to go. Why is Hashem talking to him? He has to make that choice. He has to make that choice to be the leader who will take us out. Now, by making that choice, he's going to help create what has to happen, the next steps that happen. But it's up to him to make that choice, to be that person who will make it happen. Now, another Medrash says that Hashem says, you know, I'll take someone else. Moshe was about to die when he didn't circumcise his son. When the Medrash says, in certain conversation between Moshe and their Ribbono Shel Olam, Hashem tells Moshe, 10 Moshe Rabbeinus can die, and I'm not going to change my truth. I am honest, I am truthful, and that's not going to change. If not you, fine. Someone else will do it. But it's your responsibility, it's your choice, and I want you. So Moshe Rabbeinu finally makes the choice, after 7 days of arguing, finally makes the choice to be the one who's going to take us out. So you'll ask, wait a second, did Moshe have free will or not? Yes, he had free will. And what would be if Moshe would say no? Then eventually Moshe would die and someone else would take us out of Egypt. It would not be him. So he made the choice and then he was the catalyst for that great change. What would be if he'd say no? But Hashem's plan was to take us out. So we'd come out. It might not have played itself out that way. It might not have been that day. It might not have been with the fashion of Moshe. So we needed Moshe, and that's what Hashem tells Moshe. It's got to be you. Okay, at the same time that we say it's got to be you, we also say there's part of Hashem's plan. From the beginning, Hashem said there's going to be this, and this is the way it's going to be. The Jews are going to come out of Egypt, there are going to be miracles, we're going to recognize that Hashem runs the show, and Moshe made the choice to be the great one who does it. So, okay, so he made the choice. He played that role in this great story. But in the great story, this was a part of the story that was already predetermined. Hashem decided the Jews are coming out of Egypt with the following fashion. So, that's what happens. Now, Hashem tells Pharaoh, let the Jews go. Pharaoh hardens his heart initially, right? So after he sees a few miracles, he has a choice. And he keeps hardening his heart. That means he had a free choice. He could have said, Jews, you can go to the desert and celebrate your 3-day journey. Now here's a big machlokas rishonim. What would have happened had he said you can go? One opinion says he would have packed their bags and left and goodbye. He would have never come back. Maybe they would have pursued us, maybe not. Maybe they would have drowned at the sea, maybe not. We would have left. The other opinion says we would have gone out into the desert, celebrated 3 days. Those 3 days would have given us the spiritual strength to come back and spend the remaining 190 years in Egypt and not dissolve as a people. We were on the verge of destruction. The Jewish people were about to be annihilated spiritually. So Hashem said, you gotta go. Pharaoh chose to harden his heart, but he had free choice there. So there's Hashem's plan at large, but how it will play itself out, that's up to Pharaoh now. You with me? So he has free will in the story, and his free will does not change the total outcome.
happen that I didn't have to be in this path?
According to this understanding, yes. I said there are a few approaches to this question, but if we've spent the last 25 minutes on this approach, I'm going to stick to this approach for now. Yes, according to this approach, maybe there would have been a plague, maybe there would have been something else. He had a choice whether he would be the cause of it.
So it is Hashem doing his plan. The details are...
But that doesn't take responsibility away from the ones who do it.
Give you the choice today, too.
Moshe tells the Jewish people, "Re'ei natati lifnechem hayom, et ha'chaim ve'et ha'tov ve'et ha'mavet ve'et ha'ra. Behold, I have given you the choice of light in that which is good and death in that which is bad. Uvachalta b'chaim, choose life." Right? Hashem tells us that. So that means I have a free choice. I have a choice which way I'm going to go. A person can choose to jump off a building. We have free choice in many actions. What about affecting someone else? Hashem says, if I don't let it happen, you won't be able to do it. Look, it takes time to digest. This is one approach. But it's an approach that gives a lot of comfort. Because on the one hand, it gives me responsibility to be good. And it gives me responsibility to try and protect myself as much as possible. I have to do my hishtadlut. And I'm held accountable for it, like the Gemara says. And if I don't do it, Hashem says he's going to take a person to task. He's going to judge a person again. Once a person endangers himself, so then in heaven they say, who said we should save him from it? That's the Talmud we saw in the Ein Yaakov. If a person walks on a bridge that's dangerous, if a person does dangerous things, in their days it was a bridge, it was a ship, it was walking under palm trees when the wind was blowing, there were their dangerous things. In our days it could be drinking and driving, it could be driving when drowsy, it could be speeding, not wearing a seatbelt, it could be, you know, our examples. It could be mixing alcohols, it could be taking one's medicines without having the lights on and the glasses on. It could be, you know, other things in our day and age. So the Seder, the Gemara says, so then he's endangered himself. He's used his free will to do something dangerous. And in heaven they say, okay, let's decide. Should we get involved and save him? Or let nature play its course. So there is a nature, and Hashem doesn't always get involved. And if a person chooses to endanger himself, okay, that's his fault. And if we have an army and we have the capacity to protect ourselves, so then that's part of our hishtadlut. That's part of the attempts we have to make to protect ourselves.
Why is that comforting?
It's comforting because then when a person looks at, my son just discovered today, something we discovered a few days ago, that the Kalman Levine that was murdered in Harnof was the father of a good friend of his. Ever since we moved out of the neighborhood, so they lost touch a little bit. So he didn't know that one of the people murdered was Levine. But today he saw the name Kalman Levine, and he said, Kalman Levine, Harnof, could that be the father of my friend? And turns out it is. So that's very hard. Suddenly you know the person. So if you look at it and you think that those terrorists decided who would live and who would die, so it's much harder to digest. If you say, we don't understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, but he decided who would live and who would die, they chose to be the vehicles of evil in the world, and so they are held accountable for their actions, but they wouldn't have succeeded if Hashem wouldn't have let it, so that's a little bit different.
All right, so your anger can be directed at Hashem?
Your question can be directed at Hashem. And that's another question. I said that's another question. I think that we have to define the word anger, and I think by defining, I think that the word anger and frustration assume that we have a right to have an expectation, and therefore to be disappointed. And I think that if we analyze it a little bit more, then I don't think we have a right to live, let alone have expectations, which is obviously easier said than done, because we all have expectations. Every one of us wants to be healthy and feel well and have our closest relatives be good, and we want to be successful, and we have expectations, and when it doesn't go our way, So we're very surprised, to put it mildly. But if we analyze it realistically, so what right do we have? What claims do we have? Who are we? All of our life is a gift. We have a right to make a claim. We'd like things to be a certain way, but that doesn't give us a right.